Hello and welcome to the Master of Demon Gorge podcast. Today we're talking about the Jing Empire. Last week we talked about the Khitan or Liao Empire that ruled northern China from the early 10th century into the early 12th. We ended that episode with the collapse of the Liao in the face of the challenge presented by a new insurgent nomadic race, the Nüzhen or Jurchens, who took to calling themselves the Jing. So today, in part two of our series on the other dynasties and kingdoms that coexisted with the Song Dynasty, let's talk about the Jurchens or the Jing. Just as the Khitan people, we talked about last time, traced their origins to ancient Mongolians and the Xianbei people who entered China in the 4th century, so the Jurchens also already long existed in China's borderlands. Their ancestors, living in what is now Manchuria, were known in Tang Dynasty and even earlier Chinese records by the name Mohe, and a branch of them actually moved into the Korean Peninsula. The Mohe had established a kingdom of their own called Bohai back in 698, located in portions of what is now North Korea, Manchuria, and Russian Siberia. That was during the Tang Dynasty, and the Bohai Kingdom accepted vassal status under the Tang. In 926, the newly established Khitan Empire conquered the Bohai. After that, Jurchen tribes in the relative south got absorbed into the Khitan Empire, while their brethren in the far north stayed largely outside its authority. As the Khitan or Liao Empire careened toward disaster in the early 12th century, one Jurchen chieftain rose up to lead all the Jurchen tribes. We already met him in the last episode, the man who refused to dance when the Tianzuo Emperor of the Liao asked him to do so in 1112, Wanyan Aguda. In 1114, he declared war on the Liao. The next year, in 1115, in what is now the city of Harbin, in the province of Heilongjiang in northern Manchuria, Wanyan Aguda proclaimed himself emperor and named his new empire the Jing. Why Jing? One theory says that Jing, which means gold in Chinese, was simply the translation of the name of their race, Jurchen. Another story says that Wanyan Aguda chose the name because the Khitan had deemed themselves to be like iron, and so the Jurchens would be a superior metal, gold. In any event, only after Wanyan Aguda declared his new empire did Emperor Tianzuo of the Liao take his threat seriously. Tianzuo personally led the Liao army against him, but the Jurchens were victorious, which in turn touched off rebellions within the Liao that Tianzuo had to turn around and deal with. In 1116, the Jing won another great victory against the Liao. At this time, the Song Dynasty in the south thought it saw an opportunity. Recall from the last episode that in its early decades, the Song sought to recover the 16 provinces of Yanyuan, which amounted to today's northern Hebei and northern Shanxi, including today's city of Beijing. But after repeated wars against the Liao, the Song concluded that it could not achieve its war aims. The Liao, on the other hand, concluded that it also could not achieve its aim of conquering the rest of China. So, the Song and the Liao reached the Treaty of Tanyuan in 1005, and war between the two generally came to an end. Now, as the emergent Jing presented a mortal threat against the Liao, officials in the Song court, as well as the Song emperor himself, Emperor Huizong, thought they could take advantage of the situation and finally recover the 16 provinces of Yanyun. A Song-Jing alliance against their common enemy made sense. The only problem was that that common enemy, the Liao, entirely controlled the land between the Song and the Jing. So, starting in 1118, ambassadors from both set sail from their respective countries and met in the middle of the sea. The agreement they struck by 1120 came to be known as Haishang Zhimeng, or the Treaty Upon the Sea. Under the compact, both the Song and the Jing would attack the Liao simultaneously. Once the Liao Empire was destroyed, the Jing would hand over to the Song the 16 provinces of Yanyun, and the Song would agree to pay the Jing the same amounts that it paid to the Liao annually under the Treaty of Tanyuan. When the two sides put the plan into action, however, the Jing proved to be much more successful militarily than the Song. The Song was meant to be responsible for taking what is now Beijing, but the Song army failed to do so, and in the end, it was the Jing army that succeeded there. And so, after the destruction of the Liao, the Jing claimed that the Song never lived up to its end of the bargain. The Jing returned portions of the 16 provinces of Yanyun to the Song, but not all of them. And before returning a city, the Jing made sure to carry away all valuables so that the Song side received little more than a ghost town. Meanwhile, the Song was still required to pay money to the Jing. The truth is that the Jing by now already had plans to continue their campaign southward and conquer the Song as well. And now that the Liao was destroyed, nothing stood between them. But first, Wanyan Aguda died in 1123. His brother, Wanyan Wuqimai, succeeded him as Emperor Taizong of the Jing. He was said to have had such a power physique that he personally fought bears and tigers. Whether that's true or not, the task of completing the conquest of the Liao fell to him, and he duly did his duty. And as soon as he did, in 1125, he ordered his army to continue south to conquer the Song as well. Because the Song itself had demolished some of the defensive works along its border with the Liao to make it easier to attack the Liao, now they couldn't be used to slow down the army of the Jing. The Jing army reached the Song capital of Kaifeng. In the face of determined resistance, however, the Jing decided to pause and to come to terms. This was called the Treaty of Xuanhe. It didn't last. The next year, in 1126, the Jing attacked again. And this time, they sacked Kaifeng and took not one, but two Song emperors prisoners. Why were there two Song emperors? Because when the Jing attacked, Emperor Huizong abdicated in favor of his son, who became Emperor Qingzong of the Song. But both father and son ended up prisoners of the Qing, who brought them back up north, where Emperor Taizong of the Qing decreed that they would both be stripped of their ranks and made commoners. In the end, both father and son died in captivity. This event, the sacking of the Song capital and the kidnapping of two of its emperors, brought the so-called Northern Song to an end. And it is known in history as the humiliation of Jing Kang, or Jing Kang Zhi Chi. In our episode on Yue Fei, we talked about his famous poem, still widely recited today, in which he bitterly complained about how the humiliation of Jing Kang had not yet been washed away. But the story of the Song dynasty didn't end there. Emperor Qingzong's brother, so another one of Emperor Huizong's sons, specifically his ninth son, managed to get away. In the south, with officials still loyal to the Song gathered around him, he was proclaimed Emperor Gaozong of the Song. In history, we call the first half of the Song dynasty the Northern Song, due to the relatively northerly location of its capital, Kaifeng, and we call the second half, which began with Gaozong in 1127, the Southern Song. The Jing continued to make war on the Southern Song with the aim of conquering the rest of it. But notable generals rose up to lead the Song army, the most notable of which being none other than Yue Fei. And so, though on the back foot and repeatedly placed in mortal danger, the Song dynasty simply refused to die. In 1140, Yue Fei managed to win a significant victory over the Jing, and his army threatened to retake the old capital of Kaifeng. In 1141, apparently reaching another kind of stalemate, the Jing and the Song signed the Treaty of Shaoxing. Much like the Treaty of Tanyuan in 1005 between the Song and the Liao, the Treaty of Shaoxing determined the borders between the Song and the Jing, arriving at an accommodation that largely kept for the next century. Soon after the signing of the treaty, in 1142, Emperor Gaozong of the Song had Yue Fei killed. According to the Song Shi, or History of the Song, Yue Fei's death was one of the treaty's conditions, so concerned were Jing decision makers that aggressive and competent Song military commanders like Yue Fei would continue the war. In 1150, Chancellor Wan Yanliang murdered Emperor Xizong of the Jing and proclaimed himself emperor. Wan Yanliang wasn't content with the Treaty of Shaoxing and tried once more in 1161 to invade the south. As he was campaigning in the south, another imperial cousin, Wan Yanyong, moved into Beijing and proclaimed himself Emperor Shizong of the Jing. Despite the coup, Wan Yanliang continued his invasion of the Song. But the invasion failed, and he ended up killed by his own troops. After that, the Jing finally and truly gave up on conquering the Song. That, again, didn't mean the absence of warfare. The two sides still fought, repeatedly, incessantly, just not with the war aim of destroying the other. Meanwhile, Emperor Shizong proved to be a good ruler, domestically, and the Jing Empire entered a period of prosperity. Although, like the Khitan before them, and like basically every other nomadic people that ever invaded China, the Jurchen people of the Qing began to Sinicize. Their customs became more Chinese, as did their system of government, and many no longer spoke Jurchen with much facility, but preferred the Chinese language. Emperor Shizong himself heavily promoted Confucianism. After his death in 1189, his son, Emperor Zhangzong of the Qing, continued the policy of Sinicization. And under Zhangzong, Jing politics grew increasingly corrupt. It is often said that history repeats itself. I am more of the view that it doesn't exactly repeat, but it certainly rhymes. The Khitan Liao Empire, once it Sinicized, found itself facing another nomadic people that it once ignored in the form of the Jurchens. So now, the Jurchen Jing Empire, once it Sinicized, found itself facing yet another nomadic people that it considered uncouth and unworthy of attention, the Mongols. By 1206, Genghis Khan had united Mongolia. In 1210, he severed ties with the Jing Empire, refusing to acknowledge its suzerainty and beginning his war against the Jing. Defeating the Jing army, the Mongols laid siege to what is now Beijing for a time before deciding to withdraw. In 1212, Genghis Khan resumed the war, laying siege to what is now the city of Datong, a secondary Jing capital, and once again threatened Beijing. In 1213, a coup within the Jing killed the emperor and brought a new one to the throne. No matter, the Mongols attacked again. The Jing sued for peace, which the Mongols agreed to in 1214. So afraid of the Mongols, Emperor Xuanzong of the Jing relocated his capital to the old Song capital, the city of Kaifeng. Now the Mongols used this abandonment of the north as their pretext and again invaded in 1215. And this time, they were staying. The Mongols sacked Beijing and conquered much of northern China, leaving only a rump Jing state still surviving in the lands between the Mongols and the Song in the south. Just then, the Jing got a lucky break. Genghis Khan decided that distant Khwarazm, the old Silk Road kingdom that is now part of Uzbekistan, had offended the majesty of the Great Khan. So Genghis launched a massive western campaign into Central Asia. With Genghis Khan thus distracted, the Jing managed to survive for a time. And Genghis died in 1227. In 1228, under Emperor Xuanzong's successor, Emperor Aizong of the Jing managed to win a great victory over the Mongols and to recover a large section of their empire. For a moment, it looked like there might be hope yet for the Jing. But it was a mirage. In 1230, Genghis Khan's son and successor, Ogodai, invaded. Against some of the greatest generals in human history, such as Subutai, who would later overrun more territory than even Alexander the Great and fight all the way to Central Europe, the Jing really didn't stand a chance. By 1234, all was lost. Emperor Aizong found himself surrounded with what remained of his army in the city of Caizhou. Recognizing that he himself was unlikely to escape, particularly given that he was overweight and not so good on horseback, Emperor Aizong abdicated in favor of his general, Wanyan Chengling. Being much more physically fit, Wanyan Chengling might be able to escape to live to fight another day. It didn't matter in the end. When the Mongols breached the city, Emperor Aizong committed suicide, and Wanyan Chengling was also killed in the fighting. Thus ended the once powerful Jing Empire, in a manner rather similar to how it had previously brought an end to the Liao Empire. And thus history goes on turning. As the Bible says in Ecclesiastes, all is vanity. One generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. This has been MODG. Thank you for listening.